We are started a study of the book of Revelation. I told you it's going to take a couple weeks to introduce the book, and that's where we are. We did a lot of this last week. I'll run through it. We talked about different means of interpreting it. Hopefully some of that made sense. If it didn't, I had Kim to email all this out, so you can go back through it and look. One thing I want to remind you about is as we look at the book, I want you to look at it as a scene. And we talked about this picture last week, and we talked about this as a picture of relaxation, and we looked at this picture as a picture of stress. And don't try to figure out every minute detail in the book of Revelation. Look at it as a scene and try to see what the picture is that he is painting. And we got down and talked about more of things of that nature. We talked about different colors. If we're going to understand a book that is highly symbolic, you're going to have to understand what the symbols mean. And last week we mentioned several different colors and the meanings of those particular colors, and we understand that. It's not a difficult thing, so don't try to put something that's difficult in with the symbol. Red is bloodshed, black is death, and you know, white is purity, victory, and again, those still means the same thing even today. So when we look at this book, think about this. We got into talking just a little bit about numbers. If we're going to understand or even hope to understand the book of Revelation, we're going to have to understand a little bit what numbers mean. Numbers have a meaning even unto us today, and we mentioned that last week. You know, I think this is the last slide we did last week. The number 7 is mentioned 54 times in the book of Revelation. There's 404 verses, so it's in there a lot. And just look at some of these. There's 7 letters to 7 churches. That's what it's written to, right? The book of Revelation is written to the 7 churches of Asia. There's 7 letters written to 7 different churches, 7 stars, 7 candlesticks, 7 spirits. God is described as the 7 spirits a lot of times, so we're going to understand what the number 7 means. There's a lamb with 7 eyes and 10 horns. That lamb is Jesus. We understand he's called a lamb a lot of different times, isn't he, throughout the Bible. And there's 7 thunders, 7 bowls of wrath. We'll get into all of those as we go along. 7,000 killed in an earthquake, 7 diadems on a 7-headed dragon, 7 heads on a sea beast, 7-headed scarlet beast on 7 mountains, and 7 kings. All of that sounds very difficult to understand, doesn't it? But again, look at it as symbols, as meaning something else besides trying to make it literal. Remember, one big thing we can't do with the book of Revelation is we can't pick and choose what we want to be figurative and what we want to be literal. And that's why so many people get in trouble with this book. They pick out specific things and they say, that's literal. 1,000-year reign, that's literal. And all these other things are figurative. That's not going to work. It's a book of symbols. When we think about the number 7 and we just think about the Bible in general, if we take out the book of Revelation and I think we can see that the number 7 is, it has some prominence in the Bible. It's an important number. 7 days of creation. You open your book up in the beginning in Genesis. That's a very literal book. It doesn't use figurative language, but God chooses to have 7 days of creation. The Levitical system that God put in place with the law of Moses. Look at all those different sevens that God chose to use. The 7th day is the Sabbath day. He made that day holy. It's a day of rest for the Jewish people. The 7th month was especially holy. If you go and study that, the 7th sabbatical year was followed by a year of jubilee. The 7th year was, that sabbatical year. There's 7 weeks. I believe that's Leviticus 23, if I'm not mistaken, between Pentecost or Passover and Pentecost. So from the cross to the church, you've got 7 weeks. Why did God choose that? Well, because 7's important unto him. There were 7 days was the Feast of the Tabernacles. 7 lambs were offered at Pentecost. And if you just think about Joshua, the walls of Jericho, 7 priests, 7 trumpets marched around it for 7 days, and they blew their trumpets 7 times on the 7th day. Why? I can't give you a good explanation. The number 7's important to God. I mean, even Sunday morning when we were studying the book of Genesis, you remember how many times Jacob bowed down to Esau when he met him? 7 times. Why? 7's important. I can't give you an exact reason, but it's an important number. Naaman, how many times was he told to dip in the Jordan River? You can cheat and look on the screen, but you remember that, right? 2 Kings 5, Seven times. Why? That's what God asked him to do. Seven is an important number. It's a favorite number of God. 7 days in a week, seven notes of music, seven colors in the rainbow. If you're going to look at prominent numbers in the book of Revelation, and even in the Bible as a whole, seven's important, but 12 is also important. We'll talk a little bit more about what these mean in just a moment. But spiritual Israel consisted of 12 tribes. The persecuted woman, Revelation chapter 12, got 12 stars. The heavenly city, when you read about, you know, heaven at the end of the book of Revelation, it's got 12 portals, 12 foundation stones, 12 names engraved. The tree of life, the Bible there talks about in the book of Revelation, bears 12 manner of fruits. And the multiples of 12 are found all throughout the book of Revelation. So again, if we can understand these numbers, and as we read and go through this, if we can grasp this with our mind, we can understand like 12,000, 144,000, 24,000. We can understand what the meaning is behind all of that, and it'll make much, much more sense. So if we go down and we begin to look at each individual number, the number one, I don't think the number one is in the book of Revelation. It really doesn't matter, does it? The number one is throughout the Bible over and over and over again. And the number one always is going to stand for something absolute, something unique, something alone, something unified, something that's together. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, the Bible tells Israel, you know, God is how many? One. Lord your God is one God. And therefore you shall love the Lord with all your heart. Oh, goes through all that. But he is one God, but yet... isn't God three beings? We understand that God is three beings, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. But yet he operates as one because he is absolute, he is unique, he is unified, all of those things. Genesis 2, verse 24, the Bible says when you're married, two become one. What does that mean? Same thing, right? You're unified, you're tied together. Ephesians chapter 2, 11 through 15, the Bible talks about God is going to bring two groups of people together as one. What's the two groups of people? Toby's back. He'll talk to me now. The rest of you won't. I already picked at him. Jews and Gentiles, right? God says, I'm going to take the two and I'm going to bring them together to make one. He's going to take Jew and Gentile and he's going to put them all together in his one church and they're going to operate as one body. So the number one signifies all of those things. Jesus prayed, John 17, 21, that we would be one. We all over the world, as members of his church, he prayed that we be one. And what does that mean? Unified. It means unified together. You know, we're absolutely, he is all of those different things. So we understand that. So as we study our Bibles, just remember that. The number two always stands for confirmation. Stands for confirmation. In Pharaoh's dream, you remember in Genesis 41 when Pharaoh had these dreams that had everybody puzzled, all his wise men puzzled, and he brings Joseph in and he interprets them. Why was his dream doubled? He dreamed the same thing twice, right? He kept dreaming that it had the same meaning. But why did God give it to him twice? Because it was absolute. It was confirmed. And we always, when we see the number two, especially in the book of Revelation and all through the Bible, it's going to stand for strength and confirmation. Hebrews 10:28, under the old law, a person could be condemned, could be found guilty, but only by at least two witnesses. Isn't that a good practice to even use today? If one person says something, well, but if two people say the same thing, then that means a lot more, doesn't it? It means something is going to be confirmed. So, the number means all that. Jesus sent out his disciples two by two. He did that for a particular reason, again, so things could be confirmed. You know, church discipline, Matthew chapter 15 talks about, you know, if a brother sins against you, go tell him between you and he alone. If he won't hear you, what do? You take somebody with you. Why? So all things can be confirmed. So the number two is important. It's two witnesses that's going to confirm the truth in Revelation chapter 11. And that'll be a while before we get to that. There's two beasts in Revelation chapter 13, the land beast, the sea beast. And again, those two is going to be representative of it's going to be something that's strong. Something that's, you know, got some strength to it. And it's a twofold instrument of warfare against the two beasts, conquering Christ, the sickle of judgment. And again, just look at all of these things as we go through. Two is always going to stand for confirmation, for strength, and to make a matter true. The number three is God's number. Jesus, in the Great Commission, he says, you go and baptize people in what name? Yeah, number three, right? In all three parts of the Godhead, so that is God's number. Israel had three major feasts. Three times a year, Jewish males had to go to Jerusalem. Why did God pick three times a year? That's his number. That's his number. It's for the divine Trinity. Jonah was 3 days in the fish's belly. That's what Jonah 1 verse 17 says. The fish swallowed him up, spent 3 days in there. Matthew chapter 12 verse 40, Jesus talking about Jonah. He says, just as Jonah was 3 days in the belly of the fish, so the Son of Man shall be 3 days in the belly of the earth, right? Why? Why did God choose for Jesus to be in the ground for 3 days? I can't give you an absolute answer for all of that. But that number is important to him because it is his number. Saul was 3 days without sight. And again, we can continue to hear these numbers repeated. Revelation chapter 4 and other places through the book of Revelation. Every time God is praised, the word holy is used three times. Why? Because that's God's divine number. And it's going to stand for completeness or perfection. God is going to pronounce three woes on the people. There's going to be three parts of the great city. There's the three-thirds wrath. Over and over again, it's going to stand for something God is going to do completely. And again, as we go through this, don't lose sight of this. I believe it's the whole key to understanding everything is to get a grasp on these numbers. The number 3.5, so that's not really a number, is it? 3.5 is used a lot of times in the book of Revelation. 3.5 is used in the book of Daniel. We're going to have to understand some of Daniel to understand this book. But a lot of times in the book of Revelation, it's not going to say specifically 3.5, but it might say a time, a times, and half a time. A time is one, a times is two. So when you put them together, that's three, and a half a time. So 3.5, saying the same thing. 42 months. Or 1,260 days, all of those things are said several different times, but each time that's said, it simply means 3.5. If you take 1,260 days and you divide that times 30 days in a month, what do you got? 42 months. If you take 42 months and you divide that by 12, what do you have? 3.5 years. Every time you come up with the same 3.5. And so when we understand, and we're going to get to the number 7, we've already talked about it quite a bit, but the number 7 is a perfect number, right? It's a perfect number. God is going to use it, and we'll see that in just a minute as we go along. But 3.5 is half of 7. And remember, God is using highly symbolic language. So if 7 is an absolutely perfect number, half of that is what? Just use your common sense and don't even look at the screen. If 7 is complete and perfect and absolute, half of that is what? The exact opposite, right? It's not complete. It's not absolute. It's a limited thing. So it's incompleteness, imperfection, and it's always going to stand for something that's indefinite. By context, it's usually going to point to the hope of a better day or the end of an evil period. And we're going to see as we see these numbers in the book of Revelation, always remember that. It's an incomplete amount of time that's being talked about here. You know, they may be going through a persecution or just something may be happening, but it's not complete and absolute like 7. It's going to be just for a while. And therefore, because it's just for a while, that would give a Christian a hope of something better to come along, right? If you told me that I'm going to have to endure something very difficult from now on, that doesn't give me much hope, does it? But if you tell me it's going to end after a little while, we can endure some hardships for a little while, can't we? If we've got something better to look forward to. So the number 3.5 is going to give us something better to look forward to. It's an indefinite period of time. The number 4, anybody's got any questions, you're all welcome to ask. The number 4 is man's number. And again, we use the number 4 a lot of times today, but maybe you don't think about the number 4. It's going to symbolize man's world. How many points do you have on a compass? It's going to point north, south, east, and west, right? We read about it in the Bible a lot of times, the four corners of the earth. 7 times in the book of Revelation, those four words that I've got on the screen, tribes, tongues, peoples, and nations, are going to be talked about seven different times in that book. And what is that going to symbolize? All of humanity. Everybody from every part of the earth, when those four words are being used, it's using it four times or saying four different things to describe people. And when that is used, that means all of people, all of the people. Jerusalem has four sides, or the New Jerusalem, describing heaven, has four sides and each containing three gates. Thus the city welcomes people from all points of the earth. You know, heaven is not just for Jewish people, not just for American people. The point that God's getting across is heaven's for everybody. Really doesn't matter who you are. It's got four different sides to it. And four different sides are going to represent all of the earth. In Revelation, there's four living creatures, four angels at the four corners of the earth. There's four horsemen. Again, all of these is talking about earthly things. Earthly things. So remember that as we go through. The number 5 and 10. It's going to talk about a complete man. You remember when your children were born, did anybody count their fingers and toes? Somebody be honest with me, did you? Yeah. Why? You wanted to make sure that they were so what they're supposed to be, right? If you've got 5 fingers on this hand and 5 on this hand, well, then you've got all the fingers you're supposed to have. And if you've got, you know, 5 toes on 1 foot, 5 on the other, that's what you're, if you've got 6 on one, something's wrong, right? You got 4 on one, there's something wrong. So 5 and 10 is going to represent completeness as far as a man goes. So remember that. It's completeness as far as a man goes. Not talking about God. The number 7 is going to describe God. But as far as man, it's human completeness. 10 plagues. Why did God use 10 plagues? Well, because that was what was needed to complete the plagues on mankind, right? 10 commandments. Mankind needed 10 commandments. And I understand there were 613 laws, but why did he write 10? Because it was going to be representative of mankind needed those commandments, the completeness of it. So Revelation 13, we're going to talk about those beasts when we get there, but those beasts had 10 horns. 10 horns. Well, they had complete power as far as man is concerned. And that's important. You might think that's not all that important, but when you're writing to a people and they understand these numbers and you tell them these beasts, they've got 10 horns. They don't have, you know, 7. That's God's number. They've got 10. So as far as man is concerned, they've got complete power, but not as far as God is concerned. It's different with God. And as you understand, again, all of these numbers and this symbolism, it makes a lot more sense. So you've got the dragon's got 10 horns, the first beast got 10 horns, the scarlet beast got 10 horns, again, complete power over man. But God always trumps that. The number 6. Sometimes I've been at a gas, this has happened to me several times at a gas station, I'll buy something, it'll ring up $6.66, and you know what they do? I'm not talking about American people, even Indians that ring you up, what they do? They either take away a penny or they'll add a penny. Because that number 666 terrifies people, doesn't it? Before I moved up here, we lived in Lafayette, and the prefix to everybody's telephone number was 666. People didn't like that. That's just what it was. If you had a telephone number, that was your telephone number. But a lot of people didn't like that. Because that number is tied, and people look at it as evil. And that's what people looked at the number 6 as back in this time period. It was like 13 is to us. It was an unlucky number. It was a number that you didn't want. Think about this. When did God create man? I know it's on the screen. When did he create man? 6 day. 6. God's number's what? 7. Man's always short of God. Man's always short of God. When you think about the number 666, and you look at the bottom there, 6 can never be 7, can it? If God is 7... and God is perfect and complete and divine and in control of all things, can 6 ever be 7? It can't be 7. So when I understand what the number means and I get to the point in Revelation that the mark of the beast is 666, again, what's that going to mean to a Christian living in the first century? And I know I'm getting way ahead of myself. It's not 7, is it? It don't matter how many sixes you put along the end of it, but it will never be seven. So it's always going to come short of God. You got three sixes, you got three disappointments. God's still seven. It doesn't matter how many sixes you have, you'll never have seven. And that brings us to seven. Some have said the number seven took its meaning by taking the number of the man's world and the number of God and adding them together. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've read that several different times, and perhaps that's where the significance came from. I don't know. But as the Bible portrays it, seven is an important number. Seven is earth crowned with heaven, some people would say. Again, the earth's number and God's number. You know, God rested on the seventh day. Why? Because everything was complete. He was finished. So the seventh day was his day. He was finished. Everything's complete. Seven, again, expresses completeness, God and man, and when he ties them together, it's a perfect union. Seven multiplied, again, with the number 10, which is a complete number, is going to stand for God's perfect completeness. Why did God send his people into captivity for 70 years? That was important to him, right? That was important to him to understand that it was him doing it, and it was going to be for a complete amount of time. Now, that was literal. When Judah was sent into captivity under Babylonians for 70 years. Why were there 70 members of the Jewish court? Because those people understood 70 was important. Number 7, Jesus sent out 70 people, two by two, right, in Luke chapter 10. He sent out the 70. Why did he choose 70? It's important to him. What about in forgiveness? When they come to Jesus and said, "How often shall I forgive my brother?" Up to seven times, what did he say? 70 times 7. It's important. He could have said something else, but it was important to him. So we need to understand that as we go through. This is the number of the book of Revelation. And it's always going to stand for perfection. It's always going to stand for God's perfection. And as we grasp that, it's going to make it easier to understand. The number 12. Number 12, some says it come about by multiplying 3 and 4. Again, I don't know. It really doesn't matter. Doesn't make any difference how it come about. But it's going to stand for organized religion. All the way through your Bible, the number 12 is going to stand for organized religion, but especially in the book of Revelation. And we need to get that. There's 12 tribes of Israel, right? Your whole Old Testament Bible is based upon what, pretty much? Those 12 tribes, right? We're studying the book of Genesis, and we've already had those 12 sons, or 11 of those 12 sons, born in our study right now. But everything after that is going to come back to those 12 tribes. Everything. When you get into your New Testament, what's everything based upon? Acts 2, verse 42, they continued steadfastly in whose doctrine? The apostles. How many were there? 12. When Judas died, what had to happen? They had to replace him quickly, didn't he? Why? Well, you saw it. Yeah, God wanted 12, right? It didn't matter to us and all of that. You know, some people say, well, there was 13 because Paul was, you know, appointed later. Well, how do you know one of the others didn't die first? God wanted to keep 12 for a period of time at least, and eventually that's not going to matter anymore because they're all going to die off. But it was important to God. There's, yes, sir. He was executed. Yeah. Build up the 12 again until they started being killed off, and that wasn't important anymore. But it was all your Old Testament Bibles based on 12 tribes, your New Testament Bibles based on 12 apostles. There's 24 elders described in heaven. Now just humor me. Who do you think those 24 elders are? 12 tribes, the heads of the 12 tribes, and the 12 apostles. I mean, if you just think that's what it's describing, Old Testament and New Testament is there in heaven. The whole Old Testament symbolized by the number 12. The whole New Testament symbolized by the number 12. 12 gates of the city, the Bible describes. You know, when there's 144,000 people in heaven, you know, that people struggle with that number over and over again. If you understand the number 12 means organized religion of the Old Testament, number 12 means organized religion of the New Testament, and we're about to see the number 1,000 symbolizes ultimate completeness, and I'll prove that with the Bible. You multiply those three numbers, how many you got? 144,000. How many people is going to be in heaven? Everybody that's supposed to be there. And if you are a person that's being persecuted and dealing with all of these issues, And God tells you there'll be 144,000 people there, and you understand what numbers mean, that gives you hope, right? Everybody from the Old Testament, everybody from the New Testament that's supposed to be there is going to be complete. Everybody's going to be there that's supposed to be there. So the number 1,000, again, symbolizes absoluteness, totality, completeness. You know, in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 9, the Bible says, God keeps His mercy and covenant to 1,000 generations. Open it up and check. He keeps His covenant to 1,000 generations. Does that mean that in 1,001, God stops keeping them? You don't believe that for a second, do you? What does it mean? It means God's going to always keep it, right? So the number 1,000 means absoluteness, completeness. Psalm 50, verse 10, the Bible says God owns all the cattle on 1,000 hills. Is there more than 1,000 hills on the earth? There's 1,000 hills in Jackson County where I live. All right. But God owns all the cattle on 1,000 of them. What does that mean? God owns all the cattle on all the hills, right? 2 Peter 3:8, a day with the Lord is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years as a day. What does that mean? Time is God's, right? God's not bound with time. God owns all the completeness of time. So when we get to Revelation 20 and we begin to talk about, you know, Satan's bound for 1,000 years and Christian's going to reign for 1,000 years, if people would just understand the book, the number is meant to be a symbolic number. It's not talking about a literal millennial. All this premillennial stuff is because people choose to take a number that's meant to be symbolic and they tie a literal meaning to it. And like I said, if you're going to do that, then you're going to have this great chain and this bottomless pit, you know, and all of these same things that's said in the same verses. But people don't want to do that, do they? They want to pick out the number that they think sounds good, and they're going to tie it all to what it is that they believe. So just understand that the number 1,000, it's going to always symbolize completeness, absoluteness with God. And that's something important for us to get. All right, a lot of times in the book of Revelation, there's going to be the word crown. And if you look at that simply in the English sense, you know, it doesn't make a difference. But, and I'm not big on using Greek words. You guys figure, I used to do that, but then I realized I'm not smart enough for all that. So I don't worry about that. But this is where it's important. And we will make a difference a lot of times as we're studying this book. A lot of times the word crown is the word diadem, and a lot of times it's the word Stephanos. And that's important because they have two different meanings. A diadem is a royal crown, a crown of royalty, and Stephanos, it's a crown of victory. You know, the beast may wear a crown of victory because a lot of times Satan gets the victory over us for a limited period of time, right? For a short period of time, but Jesus is the king. He's the king. He's royalty. And so there's going to be a big difference a lot of times when we're reading, especially if you're looking at this as symbolic language. So we're going to have to understand what kind of crown is being talked about. And that's going to be important, again, as we go through. All right, let's get a little bit of the setting. We said if we're going to understand this book right, we're going to have to understand who it was written to. This book was not written to Willow Avenue Church Christ in the year 2024. That's not who it was written to. So we need to forget all of this garbage that the world says that, you know, we watch the news, well, that's the book of Revelation coming true. This book was written to first century Christians. And they were living in, you know, Rome was the world power. They may not have been living as far as right in the city of Rome, but Rome was the world power. You know, in Daniel chapter 2, the Bible describes four different kingdoms, right? Four different kingdoms, your Babylonians, your Medes and your Persians, and your Greeks. And then the fourth one is going to be dreadful and exceedingly powerful, and it's going to break in pieces all the other ones, right? And in the times of those kings, we quote Daniel 2:44 a lot, right? In the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, and it'll break all these other... Okay, that's the church. The church was established in the days of the fourth kingdom, Rome. Rome was the world. Rome ruled the world. They were a powerhouse. They described themselves as the great military machine. They thought they were invincible, and it seemed as if they were to a lot of people. I mean, they trampled over, and again, God even says in His book, they trampled over everybody in front of them. They were in control of a lot of things. They were built on conquest and commerce, but there were so many rich people in Rome that there wasn't a lot of jobs. There was just as much poverty as there was riches. Because again, there were so many slaves, not a whole lot of work, and we're going to go through that to make a little bit more sense. So if you don't have a lot of work for a lot of people, what do you have? You got a lot of idleness. Idle hands are the devil's handiwork. You've heard that, right? That's biblical. That's biblical. I may not say that exact word, but that's biblical. Even the Apostle Paul says, you know, don't be idle, because that's when you mess up. But that's a lot of the problem that you have here. Christianity was in a life or death struggle. As we go through the book of Revelation, you have to understand that these people it was written to, every day was life and death. There was no way that they could avoid conflict. Now, I've got things on the screen, and I hope you can read it. I'm going to have to use my phone because I can barely read that. It says Christianity was an illegal religion in Rome. It was an illegal religion, so if you're going to be a Christian and it was illegal to be one, there's no way but to have conflict, right? Christianity aspired to be universal all over the whole world. And Rome didn't want that, was it? Rome thought they were everything. They were the world power. So if Christianity wanted to go everywhere and Rome wanted to go everywhere, what do you got? You got a conflict. Christianity was a peculiar religion. It did not mix and mingle with the world. Well, Rome didn't like that. Rome wanted you to be a part of their idolatrous practices and all of these things, and there's no other way but to have a conflict. Christianity was accused as immoral because of some of what Scripture says. Loving brethren, people would accuse them as being homosexuals, and eating the flesh and drinking the blood, people would accuse them of being cannibals, and they would take Scriptures that were meant to be figurative, and they would make it literal, and again, some of what people do today, but it caused conflict. Christians refused to engage in carnal warfare. They weren't interested in fighting, with the things that the world was interested in fighting in, and that caused conflicts. They wouldn't take the sword. They were a people of peace, and Rome didn't like that. Christians were from the poor and the outcast. And we've already said Rome was a very rich place that looked down upon people, and even Jesus himself, most people that were converted were what? They were the poor and the outcast. And so Rome didn't like that, so that was a conflict. Christians refused to compromise their faith. Well, that was a conflict. Romans hated them more than he hated the Jews. Christians were looked upon as wild fanatics because of their enthusiasm. Wonder if they would look upon us as that today. Probably not, right? But they were enthused. I mean, as you read through the Bible, what happened? When Saul wreaked havoc on the church, Acts chapter 8, verse 1, what did the people do? They went everywhere preaching the gospel. They were enthusiastic, and they didn't like that. Christianity were at odds with Roman citizens for temporal interest. We were against the idolatrous practice, the priests, the animal sacrifices, all of that. So that was a conflict that was unavoidable, and Christians refused to worship the emperor, and that's going to be a big one. And if you refuse to worship the emperor, why did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get thrown in the fiery furnace in Daniel? They refused to worship the emperor, same thing. And so again, that's a big conflict that was going to happen. My clicker quit working, guys. I don't know what happened. Oh, there we go. All right, when the book was written, I'm not going to argue this point. I believe it was written in the later date. Some people believe the earlier date. Most people, I believe the later date. But that would make a difference as far as the understanding of some things. If it was written before the destruction of Jerusalem, and it was all talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, well, that's going to change a little bit of the meaning, but not the overall meaning. The overall meaning is you endure to the end. But if it was written in the later date, the temple was already destroyed, Jerusalem had already been invaded, but Domitian had a lot of, he was the king of Rome, the Caesar of Rome at that time. He was one that put in emperor worship. You can go through, and again, we don't have but just a minute. A lot of people try to make 666 mean the time of Nero, but again, that's grasping for straws and all these different things. I want to show you one thing. Jesus, in talking to the seven churches, he talks about people that held to the doctrine of the Nicolaitans. And nothing else is mentioned of that in the New Testament. Well, a lot of people say these people came from Nicholas, one of the first seven deacons, and he left the church, and then this whole sect of people started following him. If this was the early day, wouldn't it have been talked about probably some other places? More than likely it would. But the persecution was more at the later time. This is what all the different people did. But Domitian, he demanded to be worshipped. History reveals that. He had all of these different things. He was cold and severe, and he had all these different punishments for Christians. And I'm going to try to step, this is my last one, and I'll hurry through this. But the condition of the churches, the seven churches, fits this time frame better. Deterioration had set in. Look at all these churches. You got seven of them. Five of them are bad, right? Ephesus, he says, you've left your first love. But as you look on the screen there, in 58, 62, and 64, and 65, 67, even Ephesus is not condemned anywhere else. They were praised as being a good congregation. But by the time Revelation's written, they've left their first love. They've just fell away. The church at Laodicea is talked about as being rich in Revelation chapter 3, but history records that they were completely destroyed by an earthquake in the early 60s. If you were completely destroyed in an earthquake, it's going to take you a while to get built back, isn't it? And to be rich again. All of these different things. Different historians said that it was the later date. And again, a lot of that makes a difference as to what we say it means. Next week, we may be having a gospel meeting if the weather permits. If it does, it'd be 2 weeks. If not, I'll see y'all next week. Appreciate your attention.